From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Hi everyone, we are here by the... not the space trees, the super trees at Gardens by the Bay in Singapore. The reason I said space trees is because the boys are going to talk about space base later on. We are here for the super trees, which are these massive man-made structures with lots of glowing lights. They're going off.
They are going off,
Mark. The whole phone's going off.
They're playing the super hits of the 70s and 80s in the background. You might be able to hear... And we're off for some satays, because, of course, what else do you have in Singapore? Well, everything else, of course. We've been eating our way around Singapore for the last couple of days. We're heading home to Australia tomorrow, but we won't be back in time for the show. So I thought we'd record this intro. The boys are going to look after you again. As I said, they're going to talk about Space Base, what's on Kickstarter, stealing my job while I'm away. Meanwhile, we're having an awesome time here by the super trees, and we will see you soon. I'll be back next week. Bye.
Bye.
Well, there you go. That was actual Mark and actual Dice fiance Sarah from actual Singapore.
Sarah. Mine, Sarah.
Oh, my God, it's too confusing.
Your Garth.
I think I should get rid of Joe and maybe pick up a...
Yeah. Sasha.
Sasha. Scarlet. Who knows?
Yeah.
So you are with the Dice Men Cometh tonight, believe it or not. Very professionally is episode 259, and it is the 2nd of May, which is only 2 days away from May the 4th be with you, Leon, and all of that jazz. So
cheers.
Hope you've got your Star Wars games ready and waiting. On tonight's show, as Mark so elegantly kind of put it from Gardens by the Bay, we will be talking about Space Base, otherwise known as Space.
Yep.
And then it's pretty much just Kickstarter... Because everything's on Kickstarter.
Well, I'd say this is maybe the biggest Kickstarter update we've probably ever done. Mainly Marky Boy's been away for a while. But also, I mentioned a few months ago that, God, there's nothing on Kickstarter at the moment. It's just a wasteland. Oh, how that has changed. And yes. All the dollary-doos are digitally flying out of the digital wallets.
They sure are. So with that in mind, we should just throw to a song and then come back and talk about games in space. You with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Hey, this is Dan May. I'm the creative director at Starling Games and the creator of Polyhero Dice, and you're listening to the Dice Men Cometh. I've listened to the guys' ideas about creating their own games. One on a very long drive back from BorderCon was a legacy game about wallpapering. It's not bad, actually.
That was Ben Salter with Captagon Dancer here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. And we forgot to mention earlier, I am Leon and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host Mark. Not Mark.
He's in Singapore with Sarah.
Yes, I was going to say, on the phone we have Mark, and then Garth is the one sitting right in front of me. We probably should start again from all 259 episodes ago. Some have been said. Either way, so yes, Ben Salter, an Australian artist there. Now, we're going to talk about a game that, as you said, is set in space. Well, supposedly set in space, but actually is it?
Well, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
So we are talking about Space Base.
Yes.
Now, Space Base is a little card tableau building game all about space where you... Between two and five of, well, actually, including yourself, between one and four of your nearest and dearest can play over the course of a recommended time of 60 minutes.
Yeah.
This game we played is by AEG and designed by John D. Clare, who is otherwise known as John D. Clare of Mystic Vale.
Ah.
Hasn't really done, well, look, I tell a lie, he's done several pages of games according to BGG, but his highest rated one's Mystic Vale and actually this one, Space Base.
Yes.
So, look, this game only came out in 2018. And almost immediately received the "It's a Machikoro killer" game tag that went along with the fact that it involves both dice and cards and you roll dice to do things with cards.
It is very similar. There's definitely similarities to be had.
Exactly right. But what, Leon, if I don't know what Machikoro is, and let alone I don't know what Space Base is? Well, let us educate you.
Mm.
So in this game, you will start with five potential identical decks if you've got five players. Everyone will have a little tableau which has 12 slots in it, and you will put your first 12 ships on there, all of which are identical. There is a ship in the one slot all the way through to the ship in the 12 slot.
Lovely looking tableau, by the way.
Yes, it does look pretty. And the reason there are 1 through to 12 slots is because you will have, as part of this game, 2d6, or commonly known as six-sided dice. They are bog standard, 1 through to 6, no special bits and pieces, except there's a rocket where the number one pip would be.
For reasons.
Well, for space reasons, man.
True.
So, you got your two dice, you've got your standard setup of 12 ships that just are there, and then you create a central tableau of stuff that you can buy, because there are three main, let's call them currencies in the game. One is space bucks, and you will use that to buy and upgrade from your bog standard 12 starter ships through to amazing new exciting ships. There is also the planet symbol, which is kind of like an economy, which will make sense when we explain buying things. And then you got rocket ships, which is otherwise known as victory points, because the win condition for this game is as soon as someone gets to the very end of their board and secures their 40th victory point, that triggers the end of the game. Everyone goes around to make sure they've had an even number of turns. Whoever's got the most VPs at the end of the game is declared this space winner in space.
Yes.
The game is also got colony cards. Now, colony cards are just a grab for victory points that you probably won't even look at towards until the sort of last third or so of the game. All they do is clog up your tableau, but if you've got enough money, they can get you buku points.
Yes, they kind of what you're, they give you something to aim for, which I think nearly any good game, you need to have something to aim for, especially earlier on, to go, right, you need to kind of work towards them. Mm. But as you said, you don't want to be jumping on them too soon, because you'll kind of cut your legs out from under you.
Correct. But what are these legs that you're going to cut out from under you? Well, they are your space legs with your spaceships that you were trying to upgrade. So every turn will start the same. Whoever is the active player will roll the two dice. You will then make a decision as the active player. Do I want to add the two dice together? And then I can activate the ship that is on my 10, 11, 12, 6, 7, whatever the result is. I can do the thing that that ship allows me to do. Or do I want to take the two results individually and have a ship activate on the one space and also the four spaces? Decisions are entirely up to you, Leon.
No.
Now, as the active player, you'll be looking at your own tableau and going, well, what is most beneficial to me? Because each of the ships in your initial tableau will give you something for free. And that's how this whole game will work. Most of the ships that are your starting ones will give you some income. And they might give you $1 redo, or three, or maybe even four or five if you've been lucky enough to upgrade something early.
Or you've rolled high, because the higher ships are obviously got a bit more points to them because they are more difficult to get, statistically, mathematically speaking.
Exactly, and the rule book does actually give you a table of the likelihood of your dice rolls.
Yes, because every kid's games needs to have a mathematical table in it.
Hey, look, Guildmaster, which did successfully fund on Kickstarter, will forever in my heart hold a place, because I may not remember the game, but I remember that the rule says the average roll for every die is 3.5.
Yeah.
And I will keep that in my memory banks until I die. So I appreciate that, being a nerd of gaming. So you'll roll your two dice. The active player will decide, do I want to have the combined result or do I want to treat the two dice as individuals? And that's how you go. Now, immediately there is a difference to Machikoro, because in Machikoro you start with one die. You will then do virtually the exact same thing, roll the thing, try and do the thing. However, once you have two die, you can only ever have the sum of the two die result. That's it. After I've said, okay, I'm going to activate this thing and I'm going to activate the other thing, you increase your, typically, your one of three tracks by X amount. So your income will go up, or your spaceships will go up, or your planets will go up. And then you will get the option to buy something. Now, in the middle of the table are three rows of cards. You've got
your level 1 cards, your level 2 cards, your level 3 cards, and all of those cards are different types of spaceships that will give you different things. They will give you better income, they will give you some victory points, they will give you some abilities to tweak your tableau around, and they might allow ships to be placed in different slots. But every single ship, theoretically, belongs in a certain slot, because they all are numbered 1 through to 12, and they say when you buy that particular ship, it has to go in that particular slot. When you do that, the old ship is called deployed, and it goes off your board, it turns itself upside down and slides under the board in the same slot position, and it will then offer you passive abilities. What are passive abilities, Leon? Well, they're abilities that happen when it's not your turn.
Indeed.
Because that's what happens, is when I roll the dice as the active player, it's not me that just cares about the result, it's everyone else at the table, because everyone else gets the benefit of my die rolls.
Yes, it's something that's becoming very popular in games these days, and I'm actually quite happy about that, because there's nothing worse than having a game where, like, this is really good, but when it's not my turn, I'm not paying that much attention, and I don't really care what you're doing, because sometimes it doesn't benefit me in a game like this, where you're kind of almost playing a solitaire-type game, apart from, oh, they've bought the ship that I want. Yeah, you would like to know something else that's going on.
Absolutely.
And it's good because somebody else rolls the die and you want to be paying attention to it. So when the game that we played, I took on the role of the unofficial bingo caller, that every time somebody rolled the die, I would say they've rolled a 6 and a 1.
Two little ducks.
Yes. I don't think I actually got that far to actually start naming things. I just like, ah, that'll do.
Yeah, but that's important because unless you've played some other games that they have that mechanic, and Machikoro is the logical example here, it's not something that every gamer is used to. Mm. You're used to being able to have your turn, potentially switch off, and then come around and have your turn, especially on a game that is kind of that solo, you're maximising your own engine.
Yeah, but this game, even more than Machikoro, this game is based definitely on the other people's turns. In Machikoro, you can just build up your giant army, or your city, I should say, of things that you can get your engine going, but sometimes you don't have to rely on other people's turns depending on the buildings that you've got, whereas this is very much integral as a part of the game. And the design of the cards, they've made it very, very simple that there's a giant blue square, and that blue square represents what you can do on your turn. And then there's a tiny red square, which when it gets tucked into the spot at the top, or deployed, as you said, that shows you how much you get on other people's turns. So that is the one thing that's definitely it's got over Machikoro, I think, by a mile, because I know in Machikoro, people always have to remind me, Leon, I just rolled a 5. Oh, that's right. 5 is the number I have to remember because I get like a dollar on 5, whereas here, painfully obvious. You can just look down at your tableau and go, nope. Got nothing on 5, I'm cool.
Exactly. However, part of the thing, especially early on, is almost always at least someone will forget that you can either take the sum of the die,
yes,
or you can do the 2 individual. Mm. So there'll be so many people going, oh, I couldn't do that, or I should have made a different decision because instead of getting $1, I would have got 2 or something like that. The main point is everyone is engaged in everybody's turn. Mm. Now, this game, it does say it takes about 60 minutes, and it's pretty much spot on, although admittedly our game did take longer than that. That's with talking breaks and paying the Dice Man tax in time.
I was going to say, there was 5 of us. We were all having a bevy. We were all chatting Avengers.
And someone brought a bucket of
hot cross bun M&Ms.
Which I didn't ever know were a thing.
No. And one of the flavours was not good, but the other ones were, and none of us could figure out which one was which, even though we tried them individually. But that is neither here nor there.
Correct. So you're all going to be engaged on everyone's single turn, and it's just going to go round and round and round. There's no rounds as such. There is a little first player card, but that's purely to aid at the end of the game when someone's hit that 40th VP so that you know where to stop. Level 1 cards, they're okay. They will all increase your income from, say, the $1 base that each of your initial starting cards has to maybe 3 or 4 or 5, or depending on the number of the slot that it can go into, the rewards can become insane.
Yes.
So, for example, I had a 12, as in it went in slot 12, that if I rolled a 12,
yeah,
I would get $8. Well, hey!
Yes.
I then double downed on that and put a 5 there so that when it was rolled, if I rolled it, I would get
more money, but if someone else rolled it, I would get $13 because that was my deployed strength. Well, hey!
Yes.
Problem is, rolling a 12 is the least likely result that is possible.
Yes.
So it really only happened twice during the whole game.
But that twice did help you a hell of a lot.
It never.
The beautiful thing was that these, like I said, the cards that have the higher numbers, they might give you the bigger rewards, but then the smaller ones, it's definitely a strategy that you could just kind of stack up on them. Your 1 to 6s especially, you could just try and get them and get as much deployed as possible. So on everybody's turn, you're guaranteed to get some sort of dollary deuce.
That's right. And the great thing is you can stack over and over and over again. It's not like I've got a ship that I activate on my turn. I've got one ship that activates on the same number and someone else rolls it. You can have 3, 4, 5, an unlimited number of cards. So that we were having people, damn you, Trent, who if someone rolled an 8, he would get money and 5 victory points.
Yep.
Every time someone rolled an 8, or he was able to manipulate his tableau because some of the cards allowed you to sort of take the benefit of one sector as if someone had rolled another number. So if I've rolled a 6, but my bonus is you can take the benefit of number 7, then you're able to do that. And there's a few of those little cards in the game that just take it from bog standard entry level rolling dice to a little bit more involved. And then you get these charge tokens that go into the game, which are cards that require a little plastic cube in order for them to basically fire.
Yeah.
And they are just that next step up again where they might allow you to take a card from the central tableau without having to pay for it. Or they might offer something that allows you to take victory points away from someone else. Now, the one bit I haven't mentioned about buying cards is that that's the sort of final step on your turn. So you've rolled your dice, you've collected your income in whatever shape that takes. Then if you choose to buy a card, level 1, level 2, level 3, depending on how much money you want to spend, you buy that, you replace it on your tableau. But then that card doesn't cost what it says on the card.
No.
It costs every dollar that you have.
Indeed.
And doesn't matter whether you've got $10 or $20 or $40 or whatever. The card, singular, because you can only buy one unless there are cards that allow you to do more. If you buy one card, that can cost you a huge amount of money because your income track goes all the way back to zero, or at least almost to zero, because it'll always go up to the level at which you've been able to develop your planet, which is the second track.
So it is kind of nice because you have that decision to make where you kind of go, okay, other people have rolled really well on their turns that have benefited me, so it's got to my turn. I've got, say, $15, but there's the card there that I really want that's only 5. And normally you'd go, well, I'm not spending $15 to get a 5 card, but then you realise by the time it comes back around to me, I'm probably going to have that money again. And it's kind of like ill-gotten gains that they have made this money for me. So if I lose it, it's not the end of the world. That's However, right. You could also go, well, I wanted that 5, but if this person rolls that, yes, they rolled the 3, so I get 2 more bucks, so I can get the big one that I wanted. So you've got that extra choice, which in any game in this day and age is pretty good.
Absolutely. And there are cards that will bend the rules. There are cards that say if you buy a card from the central tableau, you only have to pay the cost of the card and not take your income all the way down to zero. So there is other little rules within there, but it's all too complicated for a little chat like this. So that's how the game plays. There's really not too much more than that.
Nope.
Roll some dice, do some income, have your turn, buy a card. Then you let the next player roll them dice. Hopefully you get a bit of a benefit from it and your benefits will become increasingly good as you buy more cards and develop your own little central tableau. The game goes round and round until someone gets 40 points, which will happen really quickly.
Mm.
It'll go from 20 points to 30 points to 40 points, probably in the last 5 to 10 minutes of this game.
Yeah, we definitely had the first half, if not more, of this game. We were sitting along the under 10 victory points, or maybe a tiny bit over. And then it ended up being a race that once everyone got around to the mid-teens, 20s, then it just absolutely shot up from there.
Correct. And that's where this game doesn't overstay its welcome.
No.
But there's the game. Leon, what do you think?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. When we first started it, I enjoyed the fact that it is very simply laid out in front of you. As I said before, when playing Machikoro, which you've got to compare these two, there's no other way around it. When I play Machikoro, I said, I often forget, oh, that's right, on somebody else's turn, I'll be watching for this number or whatever. It is so obvious on this what you should be watching for. And I do like, I mean, variety, I think, is the thing in any board game that I look for the most, because a game that you want to replay over and over again for years and years to come, you want different ways to play it. And as you said, you've got those cards where you could buy them, you put them in, they're very simple, you get $4, and then the other one's deployed, destroyed, you get $2 on other people's turns. But then you have those ones where you put the charge cubes on, which have all different abilities that are written on there, on the, and then the cards that are like, you can add an extra, you know, one or minus one to a die that somebody rolls or even you roll. Or you can just do the ability to left or right from what that card is. You can go down that route and kind of build your own little engine and go, right, as long as people roll any of these numbers, I can kind of get to here and then go from there. So everyone on the table had their different ways of getting their points. And there was not really a complete blowout by the end of it. Trent did win, but I think between you, me, and Sarah, maybe not Aiden because he wasn't paying that much attention, but that's just Aiden's thing, we were all not that far. Well, tell a lie, we're probably about 10 points behind him. In this game of 40 points, that's quite a bit. But we're all a turn away from getting to be nipping at his heels.
Absolutely.
So he just kind of got there a bit quicker. And admittedly, obviously, since it's a die roll game, you've got a bit of luck. But again, Trent did build his engine, so you could argue whether it's luck or smart buying, where he, I think he rolled like, on his own turn, he rolled like 5 8s or something in a row, and that was his big one that got him heaps of money. You could kind of, but that's, again, that's the luck of the draw.
Well,
any game,
Trent, it is luck.
Yeah, very much so. Definitely not strategy. But that's fine because everyone loves chucking dice, and you've just got to remember that sometimes those die, most of the time they'll be obviously balanced because that's how kind of maths and theory works, but sometimes that luck will just kick in and it'll just be a complete blowout. But yeah, not in this sense. And I also do like the fact that the little flavor text on each of the ships that had like the USS like Kirk and stuff like that, and like, oh, I see what they were doing there. Even though a lot of the art was kind of similar but reskinned color-wise, but it's a kid's game, and the fact that it's not very expensive, I can kind of forgive that.
Yeah.
But by the end of the game, I wasn't sure. I wouldn't go calling it a Machikoro killer because it doesn't go, oh, this definitely does everything better than Machikoro. Definitely does some things better, but that's because this game is 5 years newer. And that's just, you know, if you're going to compare these two games, you've got to remember that. Gaming is moving forward, you know, theoretically. Yes, we've gone on, say, the last 10 years, but it's gone on 50 years in design, how much we've gone in the last decade or so. So there's been a big leap there. So it is a game that I think you could have both in your collection. However, I would lean towards Machikoro just for the fact that, I mean, a bit more replayability, but then again, it's got several expansions because it's been out for a while. Whereas this, I don't know, I didn't enjoy those ones that made it a little bit more complicated. They weren't my style, but I just chose not to get them. Other people went after them, that's fine, and I didn't choose. So you can kind of play to whatever the way you like to do it. However, if they were to add expansions to this, it would make the game slightly more complex in some way.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's necessarily a benefit because, as I said, I enjoyed the early game. We were just looking at the simple cards that gave a simple income on simple rolls, and that was fine. Once we got into the more complicated, oh, yeah, because I rolled a 6 and I've got these 7 abilities, I can move on. It's like, oh, what's going on here? I didn't expect this. But, yeah, overall, it's definitely in the not bad category.
There you go. So, look, I'm surprised that this game says it's 14 plus because
what?
I have played Machikoro with my 8-year-old daughter, and she has no problem with that, and she would probably have no problem with about 90% of this.
Yeah, it's
so again.
It's definitely, in some ways, definitely simpler. Maybe, like I said, that engine might be a lot more complicated, but you could just say to her, it's a solid strategy to go toward those smaller cards.
Correct. So, again, I compare it, like you say, There's no other comparison. And for me, it doesn't win against Machikoro.
Mm-hmm.
The space theme does not come through at all. It could be Earth base or it could be sea base or it could be double base. It doesn't really matter.
No.
You are purely looking at the die roll, the things that are on your tableau.
You're looking at the numbers.
So it doesn't have a theme that I can grasp a hold of. Now, it is saying that with the upcoming expansions, including Shy Pluto that's just coming out, that's going to have a bit more story elements and, in fact, ultimately come together to create sort of a larger story arc that you can play as a sort of, I guess, persistent world.
Yep.
But for me, it also goes a bit long. Machikoro is quicker than this, and yes, it's random and luck, but that is rolling dice.
Yeah.
With Machikoro, you can play the base, you can play the harbour expansion, you can play millionaires, you can really tweak the game to be as much as you or as little as you want. And yes, that's the nature of a game being out a little bit longer. And yes, that's the nature of it having some expansions. But I just like the theme of Machikoro better. I like the look of Machikoro better. And look, the fact that Machikoro has blue cards when it's your turn and green cards on someone else's turn and red cards, which are the screw you guys. And yep. then there's the purple business cards. I don't find it too hard to be able to figure out what I'm doing on my role and what someone else's is. So for me, this is not a Machikoro killer. This is reinforcing that I would rather play Machikoro.
Yeah, no, that's completely fair. And as you said, there is, I mean, this is a kid's game, but then again, so is kind of Machikoro. And Machikoro was kind of dubbed as like the Monopoly killer because that was a game. And I've said that to people. I've recommended that instead of Monopoly because I said, you're still building a town. You still got income. You're still rolling dice and it's still enjoyable, except it's an actual game. It's got an actual end and it's, you know, much more fun. Whereas this is just, yeah, I'm not too sure about this at all. And as my point was going to be that, I think we saw one card that was like, if you use two of the charges on this, you can take points from somebody else.
Yep.
But that was it. We're talking one card. Mm. So there was very much no interaction other than, you bugger, you took the card that I wanted to Correct. Buy. You were playing five games of solitaire. Now, there are a lot of games, especially in sort of a Eurotop, there are a lot of games that are like that.
100%.
But I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing, and it could be a thing that if they added an expansion that added a lot more of that, maybe this game would shoot up huge. Because we've all, the fact is, as you said, one expansion hasn't come out for this yet. And there are certain games we've talked about before, like Champions of Midgar is the one that springs immediately to mind with like the Valhalla expansion. That took a game that was fine to, this is a really good game.
Yeah.
So they could add an expansion to this. As you said, that Pluto expansion could be the one that shoots this straight to the stratosphere. Pun intended, I guess. But we just don't know at the moment. So it's a game that I would recommend that people try. It's not bad by any stretch. If someone plonked it down in front of me, I'd go, yeah, sure. Maybe if I played it 100 times, I'd be like, no, I'm not doing that again. But at the moment, it's worth a crack, but a killer of Machikoro, I don't know.
I do know, and no, it's not. So look, that is space, or just base. But yeah, it's a nice small compact box. Your kids will be able to play it. Your friends will be able to play it. It's a great introduction to this hobby, so it is very much a gateway game. And that's all we have to say about that, because we need to get to at least a half an hour of Kickstarter, otherwise Mark will turn over in his inevitable grave.
Mm-hmm.
So, where the Dice Men Cometh, it's Ed Radio 99.3 FM.
Red. This is the Dice Wife, Sarah. And when I want to listen to a podcast that sounds like at least one of them is sexy, I listen to the Dice Men Cometh.
Oh, I pressed the wrong tab, it's all gone to hell. No, everyone calm down. So that was Filthy Little Star with White Bread, a Tassie act here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. Now, we are going to, we haven't got the song.
When the love kick starts again.
And whatever and whatever. So we're going to do a Kickstarter. We're going to do the Mark Rickards Memorial Kickstarter update. And it's, as I said, rather apt that we're going to do a real long, big one tonight because Kickstarter is 10 years old.
Happy birthday. Oh, my God, have we bought Kickstarter some presents with all the money that we have given them.
Yes,
we have. Because they keep a decent percentage of every dollar that we board gamers throw to our designers and publishers through this particular medium.
Yes, so thank you to us for keeping Kickstarter's lights on. They should be very much appreciative.
Board gamers are a very sizable contribution to this. So let's start off as Mark would want us to.
Yes.
Talking about Aussie games.
Indeed.
And what more Aussie game is there than Runica and the Six-Sided Spellbooks by Aussie designer Shannon, who is of Lucidity fame.
Yes.
Now, Lucidity also involved six-sided dice. That time it was all about nightmares and horror and surviving and going through. And it was a little short game, maybe 15, 20 minutes, and it was really pretty.
Mm.
Had some awesome sort of dark comic-style art. That was really cool. I think it was a tattoo artist, I think, who did the artwork from memory.
Mm-hmm.
So this is his follow-up game, which, with the name Runica and the Six-Sided Spellbooks, yes, involves six-sided dice. And, oh, my God, this is a pretty-looking game, but you'll be able to find that out by looking at the Kickstarter page. What you'll be doing is you'll be drafting dice, and everyone loves drafting and everyone loves dice. You'll be rolling your dice, of which there are four different colours, maybe a few more, I can't remember, and then you'll be allocating those dice to either your own individual spell book, with the object being to create sort of like Tetris-y type shapes, I guess.
Yep.
You want to make sure you get the right shape to be able to claim the card to get some points and get some special abilities. Or you might want to spend some dice to earn some help from your professors.
once you get enough help from enough professors, they'll give you a little certificate. It might give you anywhere from 1 to 4 victory points. If your name's Garth, you'll get 2. And if your name's Leon, you'll get 4.
Yeah. Because Leon did the winning when we did the playing.
Correct. But what sets this game apart from a lot of modern games is that it's got this swingable, turnable, discable way that you can rotate all the dice that you'll be able to put on your own individual spell book, as in your player board.
Mm.
It looks really, really cool. It is very much a puzzle game where the person who determines who will win is how well you have done your own little tableau building, because there's a little bit of messing around with people, but it's really how good can I do my spell book using the dice I've been able to draft, swinging the thing around to make sure the orientation is going to work what's best for me so that I can get the big points, because there are lots of cards that are worth a little bit of points, including 0. And then there are some that are super mega big points because you're only trying to get to 20. A really small total. It's 20.
Yep.
And there are some cards that are worth 5 plus the points you'll get if you've got the right die faces in the dice used in the actual spellbooky thing. So one thing could be worth 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 points.
I was going to add the 9 points that won me the game.
Shut up.
Yes.
So, look, I would strongly suggest you go and check this game out.
Yep.
Shannon did a really great job with Lucidity, made $150,000, $160,000 Australian, which is awesome.
Yep.
This one has only been sort of out there for 24 hours. It is virtually 50% on the dot.
Mm-hmm.
So it will fund.
Yes.
He is very active in the community. He does a big, big focus on the mechanics of this game and the artwork. So it looks bloody beautiful.
Yep.
We've only seen a prototype version, so it'll look even better when it's real. And it's got a really cool tutorial, which is essentially a comic book where they walk you through, and it's like kind of like your first day of spell class, I guess, really.
Yep.
So it teaches the basic mechanics, does a little bit of a tutorial, and then throws you into the wizardy deep end to then go on.
Yeah, so Lucidity was good. The theme definitely appealed to me because it was rather metal. And this Runica game, as I said, we got it out the other night after playing Tiny Epic Zombies. We had a crack at it. We did the tutorial through the comic book. I must admit, at first, it didn't sell me. By the end of the game, I think he's onto an absolute winner here. I think this is a pearler of a game. And as I mentioned on the table when we were playing it, I think this is a game that if you had a regular type of group, this is a game I think you could bring out for years and years and years. Once people know this game pretty well and have their kind of different strategies and stuff, I think there's a lot of replayability to it. And as I said, it looks so nice.
It does. And that's just a production copy. So I like the fact that there's a little bit of chance in that you get, whoever is the active player at the time is going to draw out a random selection of the coloured dice.
Yep.
And that's what's going to be drafted. So there's your element of chance.
Yep.
But the rest of it is all down on you.
Yep.
So congratulations, Shannon, on getting this up to Kickstarter. Preemptively, congratulations on funding, because it's definitely going to get there at some point. It's got 21 days to go.
Yeah.
Jump on there, and it's only $69 Australian, and I think that includes shipping,
which is very, very,
very, very good for what you're getting in there. So jump on that. That's your lot, Shannon. Moving on to another Australian one, and what's even more Australian than Robin Hood, matey?
Lots of things.
Anyway, Robin Hood, designed by Rodney, who I was lucky enough to spend some time with at Essen Unplugged in Canberra last year and have been lucky enough to receive a copy of this, is a solo game.
Well, there you go.
So, again, I feel like a mini Mark here, because in this game you are taking on the role initially of Robin Hood anyway, but some of his merry men, and the goal is to free all the merry men while keeping your bounty as low as possible so that the evil, is it not Dr. John, Prince John, doesn't collect you and imprison you. So on this game, you're going to be taking out some cards from the loot deck. You'll be able to then use the currencies on them, which is you've got your arrows, or you've got your gold coins, or you've got your strength, or you've got your other bits and pieces to buy more cards, do more things, reveal cards like the Prince John cards or the Sherwood Forest cards. It's a really nice, mechanically simple 30-odd minute solo game. So I played this about 3 or 4 times, back to back to back to back to back. It's got a really cool story, because you'll always reveal a card and that'll be a round's worth of variation. So it might say you need to pay 2 gold or your bounty goes up, or you need to get rid of all your strength cards, or you need to do something that'll throw your plan out of whack.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I like is that whenever you are successful,
using the right combination of cards, in essence, freeing one of the characters, be it Maid Marian or Friar Tark or someone else, you can then decide to use their ability, because they each have a unique character ability, instead of Robin Hood's ability.
Yeah, sure.
So that you're growing your band of merry ladies and merry men, all with the aim of freeing everybody, keeping your bounty low, so that the Sherwood Forest people can all be very, very happy. It has funded already.
Yep.
It was only going for a very modest $2,000 goal. So, Rodney, good on you for setting a nice low goal so that this game can fund and you can get it into the hands of as many people as possible. Mm-hmm. It looks great. The art is cool. How much is it, Leon? Because I can't even remember how much it's worth.
Not much. The biggest one you can fund is... Oh, 40. There's two physical copies. So, $25.
There you go.
Gets you, gets it to you.
So, whoop-de-doo, go in and get it. It is really, really cool. And finally, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Relics, which is the RPG designed by Steve D and with help from, I think, Sean Fenimore and a few other people.
Yep.
That's funded. It's only got a few days to go. So, if you are into dark, being an angel falling from heaven kind of situation in your RPG world, go and check it out. There's only a few days to go.
Yes, lovely. And speaking of RPGs, that's where I'm going to kick off today. So good to see some Aussies getting involved, because the world of RPGs, and I must say, people that have listened to this show, I've definitely been a convert to the Dungeons & Dragons or your role-playing games in general over the last year, becoming... It's my new obsession. I'm a big person. I'm getting obsessed with things. When I got into board games years ago, you might have remembered, I bought all the things. RPGs, well, Dungeons & Dragons especially, is kind of where my head is at the moment. I spent my 12-hour night shift last night on my break reading through one of the books, planning my own little campaigns and planning my own little games, to which everyone else in the factory that I worked at went, what the bloody hell is he doing? When I asked them at 4 in the morning, right, lads, you walk into a room, it's a circle room, there's dead goblins, one spear to the wall, what were you doing? And they went, what the bloody hell are you talking about, mate? That's not football. I know it's not football, but
you work with a whole bunch of English people, clearly.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from.
What's that, Robin Hood
they
reference?
They very much do not sound like that. Anyway, so two I'm going to mention in the RPG world. The first one is Empire of Ghouls, which is a 5th edition campaign. So that is code for saying it's perfect for Dungeons & Dragons, but we can't officially say that, where you're going against the undead, an alliance of cultists, ghouls and vampires. So what they basically come up with, as I said, the underworld in your D&D is where the drow or your dark elves rule. Realistically, vampires and ghouls and stuff, since, you know, they don't really need to eat or sleep or whatever, and they've got an infinite number once they kill people, will just overwhelm them and destroy them. So think your Game of Thrones. Think your winter is coming, except under the ground.
Do you know, I've watched episode 3 last night and the night before.
Yeah, it's definitely worth a rewatch, that's for sure.
I also turned up the brightness a little bit.
Yes, I have been told that. So this game, it is made by Kobold Press, which is important because Kobold Press, outside of the actual official Wizards of the Coast D&D, make the best D&D books in the world. They make them. They're absolute. I've got two of their big monster manuals, which are huge. They're like 400 pages. Quality-wise, they might be half a peg down from the Wizards of the Coast. They are nearly on par. If you put a Wizards of the Coast banner up the side of it, I don't think many people would know any different.
Okay. Awesome.
There's another company called Nord Games, which are kind of behind Kobold Press, and they just had an Undead Beast book, which just finished. So this Empires of the Ghouls, in this Kickstarter, there are three books you can get. There's the campaign book. That's the main one you can get. You don't really need anything else. You can just get that one. You can also get the Underworld Player's Guide, which gives you player options, including new Underworld races and subclasses, stuff, tools, backgrounds, new undead spells, all that kind of stuff as well. There's also Undead Lairs, which gives you standalone single adventures and single maps, again, set in this underworld kind of scenario that they've invented.
Cool.
And you can get all those in a physical sense, or you can get them in a digital sense as well, which in this day and age is exactly what you want. I backed it today after seeing it today for the first time, and I'm looking forward to getting my hands on it. Only problem, the shipping is huge, so much so that I'm not even going to say it to dissuade people to go having a look at it, but apparently they are working on it, but it is not very Australian-friendly, sadly. But the quality, I can assure you, will be good. So that's that. The next one is Fantasy Grounds Unity. It is the name of the upcoming version of their virtual tabletop software that has been around since 2004. So it's been around for a very, very long time. So the Unity engine, which is used to make video games, things like Cuphead and Inside and Hearthstone, has been around for a long time. So they're using that to create this RPG system. So in this new update, what you can do is there's a map builder, which you can have a line of sight. Whereas if you move a character on this digital map, it shows you the line of sight moving. So you can tell if you're in range to certain creatures and things like that.
Cool.
You've also got fog of war placement, which is the darked out bits of the map that when you move into certain areas, you can program how much of it gets revealed. And if it's a whole room or if it's a tiny section and things like that. And there's also special effects. The system itself, it's been around for a while. You've got the campaign manager that's always been on there, interactive character sheets. You can roll dice on there, 3D, so you can play this online with your friends all over the world if you're not sitting each other face-to-face. Or you could each be sitting at a table with an iPad or a pad each or a laptop each, which a lot of people do these days when you're playing your campaign. It's launched today, and it has made $200,000.
Okay.
So it's doing all right for itself, and people are quite happy with this system.
Wonderful.
So they're the two RPGs. I just want to quick mention the Terraforming Mars expansion, which ended today, $1.2 million.
Yep.
Good on them.
Exactly. And on that note, I will mention the almost finished On Mars by a friend of the show and one of our favourite designers, Vital Lacerda, and art by Ian O'Toole. They are a match made in board gaming heaven. Again, it is ever so close to $1.2 million Australian dollars. It's got 8,500 or maybe even 8,700 backers on Kickstarter, but then it's also got backers in this other platform, some other version. So they've got over 10,000 backers full up. There are about a billion, trillion, zillion, gazillion stretch goals that are all done. If you like Vital Lacerda, you haven't got much time to get this game, and it looks like it's going to be a cracker.
Yes, as they tend to. Right, so let's move on. So we've got Hostage Negotiator, which is a solo game, and I believe, Garth, you have played the app version of Hostage
Negotiator. I have it on my own little mobile telephone machine.
I think I might have to do that myself, because the theme of this one I've always been intrigued by, and since it's an app now, which basically makes it a video game, which is my one-player games, I'd like to look. So it's made by Van Rider Games. They're the same people that do the graphic novel adventures, and they're the season two of that just finished as well, which is another thing that I backed. God, all the money that has gone, especially after coming back from overseas. Anyway, so Hostage Negotiator Korea, an expansion that introduces an overarching campaign for the Hostage Negotiator. And also, this is the final expansion, so the game is done now.
Okay.
It's been out for a very, very long time. But this campaign, it sounds awesome because it goes from when you're a negotiator, when you're going through training at your police academy, and there's cards, things like there's career events, the things that happen in your police career. There's personal events like do you get married? Do you, you know, your hard life but have develop a drinking problem or something? And they will affect the game, which sounds awesome, I think. And also you're trying to climb the ranks of the police force. There's also various traits that you can get which will affect the different cases that you go on. Things like they could be good or bad. Some of it could be like you could be really heroic and you'd be like the hero of the city. Or you could even become a dirty cop. So you could, I don't know, maybe talk down the bad guys, but maybe you can do that by bribing them or releasing them later. Who knows? I didn't look on how much this new expansion was, but for $200, hear me out, you can get everything.
And that's exactly what I'm looking at right now.
Yes. So you can get the base game, the two big expansions, which this career is one of them, and another one called Crime Wave. And then I think I think it's about 16 smaller expansions.
Well, the way they're calling it is you've got 10 abductor packs.
Yeah.
You've got one demand pack. You've got two meeple sets. You've got Negotiator Cards Series 1 and 2, and then Anna and the Defender. So basically, yes, you get everything.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. You spend another couple of dollars. And if you're already spending $200, what's another $20 to also get the player mat?
That player mat looks wicked.
Complete. And look, my experience is completely with the app, and it really, it's a tough solo game because it's not one way or the other. You don't just win or you don't just lose. You're trying to get as many of those poor survivors out as you can, and every time you cock up or make a mistake, one of those little meeples just disappears and goes into meeple heaven or hell or into a hole in the meeple ground.
Yep.
It feels really bad.
Yeah.
The game is tough, especially on the app. But when this was first put on Kickstarter, I hovered over the back button quite a lot because I go, this theme, this story, I'm really interested in. So, again, $200 for everything. Probably much what I'm spending on Vital Lacerda, so.
So why not give it a crack? Put it this way. If you buy it, I'll happily borrow it off you at some point. Right. Speaking of someone like Vital Lacerda, a legend in our game, We have now moved on to Cleopatra and the Society of Architects. Hang on, I've heard of that game before.
Yeah.
That's because it is from Bruno Cathala and Ludwig Montblanc from 2006.
Wow.
Before I was even born in a board gaming sense. a lot of people probably not in a board gaming sense back then. So, in this, players strive to become the wealthiest of Cleopatra's architects by constructing the most magnificent and valuable parts to her palace. However, you'll be tempted to deal with shady characters and trade in materials of dubious origin in order to help them build faster. Now, the thing this game was known for was the big old... You would use the box to make a big old 3D board. In this one, they've... Technology has moved on. We have this plastic stuff now. So the game, if you look on the Kickstarter page, the bits that you get with it, I'm sure they're probably completely unnecessary, but you get this huge plastic temple that goes with it that is just humongous. And also it comes with two new expansions as well, The Whims of Cleopatra and The Cult of Sobek, who's a big alligator god guy.
Nice.
Which is kind of cool. So that game has been re-released, which is pretty cool. Now, I've got a few others, which, yeah, all right, but I've got one big one that I can't wait to talk about, which is a whole page in front of you.
We'll do that one.
You don't want to throw to a little song first? Or
well,
do we want...
yeah, we can throw to a little song, Leon.
I think we throw just to a tiny little song.
Give our voice boxes a bit of a rest.
Yes.
Then we'll come back and finish up the show with Leon's big game. You at the Dice Men Cometh. It's Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And here's your song.
G'day, everyone. Garth here, live from the toilet. I've just thought I'd pause the app I'm playing at the moment to give a quick shout out to all our Patreon backers, because their money makes a huge difference to us. Every single dollar we get, we put back into the show. So far, it's allowed us to go to several conventions this year and also to be able to get enough money to keep creating great content for the show. I also wanted to give a big shout out to every new listener that we've got over the last several months who may not even know we have a Patreon now. If you feel like you've got a dollar or more burning a hole in your pocket every month and you just don't know what to do with it, jump on over to Patreon, search for The Dice Men Cometh, and no doubt your money will go to a great cause, which is getting us out there to more conventions. Every dollar we get goes back into the show. So we make zero money out of this. It goes to getting us to conventions, creating content, and making the show as good as it really can be. So look, anyway, I'm finished with my message now. Got to get back to the app. And thanks so much for listening.
Well, there you go. That was Jessica Hoop with Animal Kingdom Chaotic. You are with the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We've had our little voice box rest break.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's power through these last few minutes, Leon.
Yes.
What have you got for us? Should I be sitting down?
You should be, and you are, so continue to do that.
Done.
So the game that I think started my, Kickstarter's gone back to being good again, is a game that I've looked forward to for a very long time, and that is Bloodborne, the board game. So, the video game is from From Software, the people that made Dark Souls and Demon Souls and recently Sekiro. Now, Bloodborne itself is kind of a part of that series of very difficult games, but it's set in a gothic, horror-y type world. It is possibly my favourite game of this generation of gaming.
Whoa.
It's up there with The Witcher 3 and maybe Horizon, or maybe Spider-Man's in there as well, but either way, I love Bloodborne, and the theme especially suits me down to the ground. Now, the game itself is designed by Michael Shinnell, who's behind Rum and Bones, the Game of Thrones minigame, and Xenoshift.
Okay.
So he's got a good pedigree. And, funnily enough, Eric Lang, who'd have thunk it, who's the man behind Blood Rage, Rising Sun, and every other game that, of course, this is a CMON game, who are the undisputed, and I will not be argued on this, kings of the board game Kickstarter world. If you want to know how to do, I mean, yes, they've got millions of dollars behind them now, but if you want to know how to do a really awesome Kickstarter or Kickstarter page or how to keep people involved, they are the people to look to.
Yes. If you like plastic, oh my God.
Yes.
They will give you plastic.
Yes. So it is a campaign-based action game. Players take on the role of the hunters working against the game to uncover the mysteries hidden within the city of Yharnam and beyond, featuring unique trick weapons, each with various forms and powers. Hunters have to think quickly and adapt their tactics to overcome the multitude of foes that stand in their way, learning their behavior, exploiting their weaknesses, and striking them down. Featuring unique card-driven combat, luck has no place here. Success or failure depends on your choices and how you approach each engagement, which is perfect, because that is exactly what the video game is. There's no luck in this. This game is not hard. Sorry. not easy, is what I was trying to say. And it all comes down to how you've learnt the game and your own skill. So there's no dice rolling in this board game. It's card management and what you decide to do. And as it said, each of the bad guys you go up against, they'll have various different attacks, and you need to work out the likelihood of the certain attacks they're going to be doing at the time and how you can best get around them, exactly like the video game. And other than that, it's a big old dungeon crawl. So the game itself comes with four campaigns with three missions each, or you can play individual dungeons as you see fit, putting in all the different monsters. And again, as you said, plastic, 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 plastic. There's so many different, and they're all based off the game, which has got some of the coolest characters and monster art that I've seen in any video game.
Okay.
They've also just unlocked a player versus player mode, so you can set up a match, each get a hunter, and just go for your life. There's also about 10 or 12 videos on the Kickstarter page, which, again, kings of Kickstarter, that show you how the game works and the reason why they chose the mechanics for this game and things like that, and it just makes absolutely sense. As well, as I've mentioned before, if you're an RPG person, if lots of people that don't use Theatre of the Mind in their battles, if you people that use maps and you want some cool beasties, back it on that alone. So,
and a lot of people do that.
Yeah.
Similarly, a lot of people back the Horizon Zero Dawn board game.
Yeah.
Not for the game.
Giant robot dinosaur minis. Yeah. So anyway, this game definitely needs your help, people. It's made only $3 million in the last week. It's unlocking stretch goals left, right, and centre. There's already two other expansions that are optional buys at the moment that, who knows, if we get lots and lots and lots of millions more people on there, maybe they'll just get thrown in with the game. Who knows? But they're different sections of the video game that add different bosses to go up against, different scenarios and whatnot. And I know that this is, to a lot of people, just another one of those games. However, they have refined this over the years, the way that they've these different games, and you've got at the end of the day, things like Blood Rage and Rising Sun, although yes, I've got huge minis, they're very good games. They're very highly rated games by any type of board game critic, have you, and they've refined over the years how to make these games, and they've worked very closely with the video game people, and they know how to make a good video game. So it only makes sense that hopefully this comes out well. So I am looking forward to it.
Well, yes, you are a backer.
Yes, I am a very much one of the 3 million.
I honestly haven't even looked at that pledge because I saw Leon is a backer, and I went, okay, I don't need to know anything about that. But you are dead right. I enjoyed Blood Rage, but I really liked Rising Sun.
Yeah.
So if they continue to produce games that are getting mechanically better and more interesting, and if it's in a universe that I can enjoy, then I'm happy.
Yeah, so it's more descent kind of scenario based, as opposed to like an actual board game like your Rising Sun. But as I said, they've refined how they make things over the years. And they did bring out a Dark Souls board game a few years ago, which a lot of people backed. It made a hell of a lot of money. I don't think the game was that well received because it was a bit grindy, which the video games kind of are as well.
Yep.
But Bloodborne is a bit more action based and a little, not necessarily more strategic, because they're all like that. So again, they've refined that system and everything that they've learned, and it should be an absolute pearler.
All right. And on that note, we're going to call it quits for tonight.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to come back next week though, and we'll have some random old fella sitting here with us.
Oh God.
Who won't be complaining about the heat of Singapore. He'll be complaining about the coldness of Tasmania.
Oh, it's dark here.
And that'll be for episode 260. So, look, we have been Garth and Leon. It has been the Dice Men Cometh. It's been episode 259. And we will see you all next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.